Taken under advisement. Our next case for argument this morning is United States against Cruz Rey and Garcia Rey.
May it please the Court, my name is Andrew Merrick, and I represent the defendants Rosalio Cruz and Zola Garcia. The District Court committed several errors that require this Court to reverse the defendants' convictions. First, the District Court erred or abused its discretion when it admitted the voice identification testimony of Officer Maritza Toy. Officer Toy's testimony was improper because Officer Toy was not familiar with Cruz's voice and because it was an improper lay opinion. Now, we believe this case presents the Court with a prime opportunity to clarify its minimal familiarity jurisprudence with respect to voice identification. In this Court's recent cases, the Court has gone out of its way to give meaning to the minimal familiarity standard and to demonstrate that low bar does not mean no bar. In particular, in this Court's most recent decision, United States v. Jones, decided just this past April, the Court held that the detective had minimal familiarity with the defendant's voice, where the detective heard the defendant during multiple court appearances, and where the defendant spoke multiple sentences during those court appearances. But the Court emphasized merely hearing the defendant speak in person on one or more occasions is not sufficient to establish minimal familiarity. Rather, the defendant must speak enough that the witness is able to make a positive voice identification. Here, the only basis for Officer Toy's claimed familiarity with Cruz's voice is from listening to a 10-second voice sample. In that recording, Cruz says four things: his name, his address, his telephone number, and his date of birth. That amounts to six words and a handful of numbers: Rosalio, Cruz, North, Washington, Utah, February. Six words, 10 seconds, not enough.
How do we know whether it's enough or not enough? Is there any academic research on this question of how long a voice exemplar has to be before inferences are reliable?
I am not aware of any scientific research on this topic, and there is no...
See, your proposition... I recognize it was not original to you, but the proposition made in the original defendant's brief and the supplemental brief is that we lawyers know that 10 to 15 seconds can't be enough, that the error rate is too high. But, of course, what we lawyers know may or may not be, or what we lawyers think we know may or may not be true. I was just wondering whether there was any basis for determining what's true.
That there is no bright-line test, and again, I'm aware of no academic research, but if this Court's statements in United States v. Jones are to be given effect, then we lawyers, this Court, is in a position to make a determination as to when enough is enough. And in Jones, we think the Court...
Probably we're going to make that determination based on some reason to believe it's correct, right? Your argument is that 15 seconds is shorter than 30 seconds or shorter than a minute. But where do we know that enough is enough? Right?
I don't think there is a bright-line test. It's a facts and circumstances situation. And again, on these facts and these circumstances, it is not enough. A 10-second voice sample says four things, six words. It's not enough. And I think the government doesn't seriously contend that listening to someone's voice for 10 seconds is sufficient to establish...
10 seconds after you started to talk, I could identify the voice.
And I think the important point is right now, as we're having this oral argument, it is more of a conversation. And I think the Jones Court emphasizes multiple sentences. What you have on this recording is Mr. Cruz responding to, again, four questions, say in six words. And so I think that, and again, this is where the government's contention that Mr. Cruz spoke multiple times, or where Officer Toy listened to the recording multiple times, fails. And that's because listening to the same six words over and over again does not permit the listener to become familiar with the voice characteristics of the defendant. And this court emphasized that in United States v. Zambrana. Familiarity turns on familiarity with voice characteristics, tone, pitch, depth, inflection, pauses. All those things you can gather when we're having this conversation right now, you cannot gather that by listening to someone say Rosalios 50 times or 100 times.
I completely understand that, and I also understand Judge Bauer's point. This is, after all, the Everett McKinley Dirksen United States Courthouse, and anybody who would listen to Everett Dirksen for 2 seconds could identify his voice, right? So we need to know something not only about this voice and whether it was distinctive, but about how long one ordinarily needs to find those distinctive features that identify a voice. That strikes me as an empirical question. It's certainly not something taught in law schools.
I think this court has endeavored on multiple occasions to give meaning to that standard as to minimal familiarity. And if you look at the court's cases over time...
Is it the decision as to whether it was sufficient a question of fact as opposed to a question of law?
I believe it is. I believe the district court has discretion to... That the district court had discretion in this case, but the district court abused that discretion when you...
Is it a question of fact or a question of law?
I think it is a mixed question of fact and law. The law
is a question of law. Where does the law say that there's an absolute?
I think the law says when the law provides...
The law says what the judge has to do is decide whether or not, as a matter of fact, there was sufficient to let the identification proceed.
The law says that for voice identification testimony to be admissible, the listener has to have minimal familiarity.
The judge has to be convinced that there is sufficient knowledge for the testimony.
Correct.
It's a question of fact.
I think, again, it's a mixed question of law and fact. I think the district court has discretion to interpret the facts and to determine whether...
As a matter of law, the judge has a right to let it in. How's that?
I think the judge has a right to let in voice identification testimony.
What he believes to be sufficient.
I'm sorry?
What he believes to be sufficient. As a matter of fact.
The district court has discretion to make that determination, but the district court can't abuse that discretion.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry?
I said that's okay. I'm just playing games. Go ahead.
Okay. So we would submit in this case, again, 10 seconds, 6 words. It's just not enough to establish minimal familiarity. Now, the voice identification testimony of Officer Cruz should have been excluded for another reason, and that is because it is an improper lay opinion. Now, the federal rules contemplate the use of lay opinion testimony in establishing a voice identification, but that testimony still must meet the requirements of Federal Rule of Evidence 701. And for lay opinion testimony to be admissible under 701, it's got to be rationally based on the perception of the witness, helpful to the jury, and not based on any kind of specialized knowledge. Now, this court's decisions in Stormer and Towns set forth the appropriate standard when dealing with identification testimony. And in those cases, the court held that for identification testimony to be helpful to a juror, the witness has to be in a better position than the jury is to make that identification. The Lapeer case cited on page 14 of our brief out of the Ninth Circuit is almost on all fours. There you had a police detective who testified at a bank robbery trial. He looked at a photograph of the defendant from a surveillance photograph from the bank robbery. He looked at the defendant, and he said, that's the same person. That's exactly what's going on here. Officer Toy listened to a 10-second voice sample. She listened to some audio, some wiretap conversations, and she said it's the same voice. The problem with that testimony is that both the voice sample and the wiretap conversations were admitted into evidence and played for the jury. The jury was thus just as capable as Officer Toy of making that comparison.
The jury was as capable as Officer Toy only if the defendant took the stand and testified and the jury could hear his own voice. Did that happen?
Officer Toy's sole basis of...
I'm not asking about Officer Toy's basis. You said the jury could make the decision for itself only if the jury heard the defendant testify. Did he testify?
He did not testify, but the jury heard him through the voice sample.
The jury was in no position to make that.
Right?
Did the defendant give a different voice exemplar? Right? You could imagine a defense... Imagine a case where the defense counsel doesn't want his client on the stand. Absolutely not. But where there's an agreement to give, say, a 5-minute voice exemplar of the defendant saying things unrelated to the case. It would have to be unrelated, or you've got testimony without cross-examination, and offering that to the jury. Did the defense try that approach?
That's essentially what happened here, is that the government took a 10-second voice sample. They played that voice sample for the jury.
No, look, I asked a concrete question. Did the defense say, I would like to give a 5-minute voice exemplar and have that played for the jury so that the jury can make an independent decision about whether the voice on the tape is the voice they're hearing in this voice exemplar?
I'm not aware as to whether the defense tried to introduce that. I would say that the defense has really no obligation to prove anything in this case.
Of course it has no obligation to do anything. Mm-hmm. But my line of questioning was sparked by the proposition that Officer Toy is doing something the jury could do for itself. You know, that's an old line about why you don't want experts to testify. It's a line that since Rule 702 has had no purchase, right, gets nowhere. But there are better ways to do things. And, of course, the better way here might have been to have a longer voice exemplar. I was just trying to figure out whether anybody had proposed to the judge the better way.
That there were other better ways in this case, too. There were three co-conspirators that testified in this case, and the government elected not to ask those individuals who purportedly would have been familiar with Cruz's voice to make that identification. Rather, I think the government made a strategic decision to streamline the evidence and introduce all of the identification testimony through Officer Toy. So it's not as though there was no other way for the government to establish identification in this case. The government, with full knowledge of this court's minimal familiarity jurisprudence, decided to introduce the evidence through Officer Toy. And again, so we would submit that here Officer Toy has no voice identification training, did not purport to apply any type of scientific parameters or testing to the voice comparison. Her only basis for being familiar with Cruz's voice was from listening to the same voice sample that was played for the jury. So in this case, we would submit that her testimony was not helpful because the jury was just as capable as she was of making that determination. Now, we also believe the district court erred when it instructed the jury that the jury, in effect, must follow the transcripts that were provided by the government in this case. Now, this court's case in United States versus Nunez confirms that a district court has discretion to admit transcripts and permit the jury to view those transcripts. But the district court must instruct the jury that the transcripts are not the evidence. The actual evidence is the audio. And to the extent the jury determines that the audio is in any way, that the transcripts are in any way incorrect, the jury must disregard those transcripts and follow the audio. And then in the Nunez case, this court held that the district court erred in instructing the jury in that case that it could give any weight whatsoever to transcripts. And here we believe the district court erred when it instructed the jury before it admitted the transcripts provided by the government. And there's really, I think, at least two problems with the instruction. First, I think it implied that the court, rather than the government, was supplying the transcripts. The court repeatedly stated why we have interpreters, why we're providing you with this transcript. And second, I think the instruction really required the jury to follow the transcript. The court stated, this is why the reason we have interpreters is so that we have one interpretation, so that the jury will consider the same evidence, and the jurors must go with the translation. So we think that instruction was problematic for those two reasons, and it really tainted the trial in at least two ways here. First, I think it required the jury to accept the content of the government's translations. And perhaps more importantly, it required the jury to accept the government's purported identification of Mr. Cruz.
Was there any objection to the translation?
There were objections to the transcripts being used. The translation from Spanish to English was undermined through cross-examination in this case.
So there wasn't an objection to the translation, though?
There was an objection to the admission of the transcripts and to providing the transcripts to the jury at all.
On the basis of translation?
On the basis I don't think it was on the basis of the translation itself. Again, the translation was contested through cross-examination. And that cross-examination established that they were not literal translations, they were replete with slang, all these other issues. I'd like to reserve my last minute for rebuttal, if I may.
Certainly, Mr. Merrick. Mr. Andrack.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Matthias Andrack on behalf of the United States. First of all, Your Honors, the district court did not abuse its discretion in allowing Officer Toy to testify regarding voice identification. The statute, as well as case law, indicates that all that is needed is a low bar of familiarity, and that minimal familiarity is sufficient for the witness to testify regarding voice identification. In this case, Officer Toy listened to a short voice exemplar over and over until she became comfortable with testifying in court that it was indeed Rosario Cruz Reyes' voice.
Is there any reason to believe that listening to a short exemplar over and over improves voice identification?
Your Honor, I think there's a low bar of admissibility.
No.
So when
counsel, listen to my question. Is there any reason to believe that listening to a voice exemplar over and over improves the reliability of voice identification?
I believe common sense dictates that if all I can tell you is common sense would dictate.
Common sense is often wrong.
Right.
People who see somebody they think is a robber have an extremely high error rate. Right? I'm asking what we know about voice identification. And in particular, your argument, the government's argument in this case, rests on the proposition that listening to a short voice exemplar over and over improves the accuracy of identification. I'm trying to figure out whether that's true or whether listening to it over and over just increases the chance that an initial mistake will be repeated later.
The sworn testimony by Officer Toy is that, listening to that voice exemplar over and over.
I will give up. But if you ask a witness whether a witness is certain that he recognizes the accused, there is, as a matter of social science, this is well known, there is no relation between the witness's certainty and the truth. There is none. I'm trying to figure out what we know about voice identification, and I gather that the prosecutor knows no more about the social science of voice identification than opposing counsel.
Correct, Your Honor. I'm just referring.
You're just asking us to make it all up.
No, sir. I'm asking to.
The argument, so far as I know, the argument that you're making could be exactly true, or it could be total fantasy. We don't have any basis for distinguishing which is which.
Correct. I am asking that the court refer to the sworn testimony. Officer Toy testified to this and was cross-examined on this, that she became familiar with it, and it helped her. The scientific-wise, I don't know. I know the sworn testimony at trial was that listening to it over and over helped her identify Cruz Reyes' voice. Is it relatively weak? The court has ruled that, for instance, in United States versus Mansouri and United States versus Jones, that even though testimony about voice identification that is relatively weak, it is still admissible as long as it meets that low bar of familiarity. In particular, defense counsel cited U.S. v. Jones. In that case, the witness heard the voice on several occasions in open court, as little as two sentences. It was not recorded, and the defendant, though, did respond more than just yes or no answers. The court ruled there that although relatively weak, it met the low bar of familiarity for admissibility. It then comes down to the trier of fact to decide whether or not it was proven beyond a reasonable doubt that the particular defendant was on the wiretap talking about the drug crimes. The government did indeed establish voice identification in other ways than Officer Toy's testimony. There are several ways in which the government established voice identification that corroborated and supported Officer Toy's testimony. Foremost, the defendant was referred to by his nickname, Chalilo, which is a Spanish nickname for Rosario, on the wiretaps. Secondly, Freddie Palmero was a cooperating witness and testified that that was indeed the defendant's voice on the phone. And that was in page 656 of the transcripts. So Freddie Palmero also identified the defendant's voice. And in particular, Palmero talked about specific conversations he had with the defendant that were referenced in the wiretaps. I'm specifically relating.
Did the jury hear the same things that the witness heard? That is, did they hear the minimal conversations, words that were said, and hear the transcript of the phone conversation?
Yes, Your Honor.
So they heard the both things?
They heard the voice exemplar and the phone conversations, yes, sir.
So they had the same information available to them that the witness had?
No, sir. They had the same information available.
Yes.
However, Officer Torrey was uniquely positioned to provide helpful testimony, and here's why, Your Honor.
Stick with me for a while. They heard it all. They could accept or reject what the officer said, couldn't they?
Yes.
So if they decided the officer was correct as a matter of accident almost, they would go that way. Now they could also figure he was full of baloney.
Correct.
Well, can I get back to the witness that identified it? There was a witness that testified that's, on my conversations, I can tell that's the same person.
Freddie Palmero was a cooperating defendant that testified. He was asked at one point, I believe even by defense counsel, of whether or not he listened to the telephone calls regarding the November incident. That was the 1 kilogram drug deal. He testified, yes, he did listen to those telephone calls, and he did converse with Rosalio Cruz Rea on the phone about those calls and did agree to obtain a kilogram of cocaine from Rosalio Cruz Rea's cohorts in that. And in addition, he was asked specifically about conversations he had, for instance, the kilogram of cocaine being good for the frying pan. He referenced that in his testimony, and indeed that was corroborated by the wiretap calls. Tim Morris was also a cooperating individual. Morris testified he spoke with Rosalio Cruz Rea on the phone and that Cruz Rea directed him to send some kilograms of cocaine on a car hauler to Indiana. That was also played for the jury, where Tim Morris actually spoke with Rosalio Cruz Rea. And in addition, Your Honor, there's the confession of the defendant, which also corroborates evidence they heard on the wiretap that he was sending kilograms of cocaine from Utah into Indiana. He also indicated he was using money orders to launder the money derived from the sale of cocaine, and that too was corroborated by the wiretap. So I don't want it to seem like it was just Officer Toy's testimony that indicated it was Rosalio Cruz Rea on the wiretap. I believe Officer Torrey was uniquely positioned to give helpful information. She was bilingual. She said she was familiar with Spanish accents, and she could dedicate almost an unlimited amount of time in an office by herself listening to these calls over and over until she was familiar, or if she was familiar, to testify under oath about those calls. Does the court want me to address any specific? There's maybe 7 or 8 issues that were raised. Any specific, or I'll just go with the jury instructions? I believe the jury instructions, Your Honor's, read as a whole accurately and appropriately reflect the law. There was one aspect of the district court's admonishment to the juries that is a little confusing. That was in the context, though, of the court advising the jury they're not to rely on any of their own Spanish language in coming up with their own translations. He went on in that same portion to talk about that the evidence is the wiretap tapes and that it's their job to evaluate the credibility of the witnesses. And again, we believe any confusion was cleared up in the end in the final jury instructions, wherein, once again, Judge Young, the district court judge, instructs the jury appropriately on the law about the use of transcripts, about how they can accept all, none, or some of the transcripts, and about expert witness testimony, about how they are charged with evaluating the credibility of the government's expert witnesses, including the linguist who provided the transcripts to the jury. So,
just out of curiosity, were there any Spanish speakers on the jury?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I know it was asked before. Certainly no fluent speakers. I think maybe some might have, I'm trying to recall, but I think some might have had some high school Spanish, but no fluent speakers, Your Honor. Another issue, and I've only spoken on Rosalio Cruz Rea, so the other defendant here is Zoila Garcia, and she brings up one issue on appeal, and that is the probable cause to stop and search the car that was laden with the kilograms of cocaine. That information, that probable cause, was derived from an informant, Tim Morris, who also testified at trial, who predicted that this car would be filled with boxes of kilograms of cocaine, and then that the car, this Ford Focus, would travel towards Indiana. It's important to note that Tim Morris made a call to Rosalio Cruz Rea in front of law enforcement, wherein he said, look, I can't take the car and drive it to your house. Police then conducted surveillance of that Ford Focus and saw the Ford Focus go from the auto store over to Cruz Reyes' residence. It was then loaded with gift wrap packages. Tim Morris said that those gifts that he had transported drugs in gift wrap packages for Rosalio Cruz Rea at an earlier date, and those packages were loaded in the Ford Focus, and the Ford Focus then began to travel towards Indiana. That probable cause is in addition to the information law enforcement corroborated that was provided by Tim Morris about the drug trafficking activities of Rosalio Cruz Rea, the residences in Indianapolis that he was using, and how he did his drug business. That was all corroborated prior to the Utah State Trooper pulling over the car. The trooper pulls over the car based on the information from Tim Morris, and from there a search is conducted of the car. Zoila Garcia also gives consent to the search as well. If the court doesn't have any more questions, the government would yield its time. I don't know.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Anything further, Mr. Merrick?
Yes, please. If I may, Judge, I need to correct right off the bat a couple of misstatements in the record, and I would caution the court to be careful in accepting the government's contentions in this regard. First, with regard to corroboration as to the voice identification, whether the defendant's nickname, Chalio, was used, the transcript, Stephanie Skelski, the government's expert, testified that the nickname for Rosalio is Chalio. The name identified in one page of 255 pages of wiretap recordings is Chalilo, C-H-A-L-I-L-L-O. It's a different name. Second, with regard to Mr. Palmero identifying Cruz's voice, on page 669 of the transcript, Mr. Palmero is asked on redirect by the government whether he's ever heard the tapes, whether the government's ever played these audio recordings for him, and he says, no, he has not. So again, and with respect to the confession, whether that corroborates the voice identification, Mr. Cruz never purportedly confessed to being the voice on the recording, and the fact that he may have, according to the government's witness, confessed to dealing drugs does not establish that he was the voice on the recording. I see my time's up.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much.